Dr. David, we can't hear you.
Sorry. Is that better? I may have to come. Okay. If not, I may have to come back. I've just ended another like WebEx meeting. And so sometimes when I toggle between them, the mics freak out. But with that being said, welcome to the Committee on Behavior Analysts. It's October 30th, 2020. The time is 9:32. We'll begin the meeting by calling roll call. Ms. Michelson, will you please engage in that matter?
Yes. Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson? Dr. Rates? Dr. Rates?
She also likes to be muted.
There she You're is. On mute.
Present? Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Okay, we have quorum. Thank you.
Very good. We'll begin with general committee remarks. I would just like to, once again, as this committee begins, appreciate all the hard work from Ms. Michelson, Ms. Pakanon, Kathy, and Jean in getting us prepared for these meetings, materials, and making sure that we have our questions answered as we march towards these meetings. That is no small feat. Without them, we really cannot operate as a committee and then make the recommendations that we need to the board. So thank you all. And I know you're doing this from remotely and you're doing this under the circumstances that we find ourselves in. And I just want to share our appreciation as members of this committee for all of your efforts. So thank you.
Yeah, and Dr. Davey, I'd also like to share those same sentiments. There was a few pieces of documentation that I requested and were that I received really quick from the board. So appreciate the efforts on the staff there as well.
Very good. Other announcements. We, Dr. Davis Wilson, welcomed into the world a brand new baby girl into the world, and so she is not going to be here today. With us. We want to wish her the best and look forward to her joining us at the next meeting. Any other announcements or updates from board staff or committee members?
I do not have any updates at this time.
All right.
No updates.
We'll move into an approval for minutes. I will just remind the two committee members that are on the call that since we are down one appointee and Dr. Davis Wilson, that you two are going to be carrying a lot of load today in terms of motions and seconds. So be prepared. So hopefully everybody's had a chance to review both the regular session minutes from September 28th as well as the executive session minutes from September 28th. I'd like to entertain a motion to have those approved.
Dr. Davey, I'll make a motion to approve both the minutes and the executive session minutes.
Very good. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Very good. All in favor, say aye.
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 Very good. Moving on to item number five, discussion and consideration, possible action regarding recommendations to the board pertaining to the approval of behavior analyst applications.
Dr. Davey, yes. I apologize for interrupting. May we go to number six first for Mr. Oliver's application?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go ahead then, and thanks to Ms. Michelson, let's redirect our attention to item number six, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recommendation to the board pertaining to the approval or denial of behavior analyst application or applicant. Ms. Michelson, I'll let you give us an update on this.
Yes, I will provide the committee with a summary, and I wanted to go to this application first just because we had a few individuals on the line and they're only here for a little bit of time. So my summary is a little bit lengthy, but I just wanted to give the committee a full overview, so I apologize. Mr. Oliver's application is pending before the committee today to determine if he meets the requirements for licensure and to make a recommendation to the board whether to approve or deny that application. As the committee may recall, this is Mr. Oliver's second application for licensure. He initially submitted an application back in 2019. While that application was pending, the board had received a complaint against Mr. Oliver from his former employer, Aspen Behavioral Consulting, who terminated Mr. Oliver after it was determined that he forged a caregiver's signature and documented a different end time for a session than what was reported to his supervisor. In January of 2020, the board reviewed the complaint and that first application. The board voted to deny the application based on the complaint and the forged documentation, which Mr. Oliver admitted to upon questioning at that board meeting. The board had noted that Mr. Oliver would need to provide evidence that he has been rehabilitated and that his character meets the ethical standards required of the profession with a subsequent application. Mr. Oliver did not appeal that denial. However, 2 months later, he submitted a second application for licensure. This second application was reviewed by the committee at its meeting on August 8th. The committee members indicated that they were struggling with the misrepresentations Mr. Oliver has made with this application, with his description and scope of his work activities at his current employment, the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, where he was hired on in January of 2020 under the job title Clinical Supervisor-Clinical Supervisor Designee. The committee was also concerned that Mr. Oliver's answers did not directly address their questions and failed to provide the required level of clarity. The committee discussion reflected the need to learn more from Mr. Oliver's current employer card and his supervisor to include obtaining some of his billing records and progress notes from the clients he served. After deliberation, the committee voted to table the application and subpoena card to obtain his supervisor's testimony on Mr. Oliver's roles and responsibilities, the supervision notes, and a client list of those clients served from which staff will randomly select 5 client records to review. The committee noted that the application would come back for the CBA's review once this information was obtained by staff. In the week following the August 7th CBA meeting, I was notified by card in an email that Mr. Oliver's employment was terminated on August 14th in light of the information that had come to their attention regarding Mr. Oliver's deception regarding his previous employer and the circumstances surrounding his departure. Mr. Oliver had also notified me of the termination on the same date I had received notification from the employer. In a corrective action memo provided by CARD and Mr. Oliver, the following was noted. Mr. Oliver did not list his employment at Aspen on his employment application. During the job interview in 2019, Mr. Oliver reported he was submitting his application to become an LBA. His supervisors followed up with him multiple times throughout 2020 to determine the status of his licensure application. Mr. Oliver shared that he had submitted an application to the board and that it was under review. However, no additional details were provided. Mr. Oliver did not disclose at any point in 2020 that his application had been denied or the events that led to the denial. The agency reviewed the audio recording for the August 7th CBA meeting and noted that Mr. Oliver had told the committee that he was not performing CSD tasks in Arizona and that all of his work was being supervised by a BCBA. CARD indicated in their notice that this representation was not truthful as Mr. Oliver was hired into a CSD position at the agency, was completing the training program, and was expected to perform these tasks throughout the time with all of his assigned patients. It was also noted that during the CBA meeting, Mr. Oliver had confirmed that he intentionally withheld information from the agency regarding the incident with his previous employer, which was done in an effort to withhold information that would have led the agency not to extend a job offer to him. Additionally, after the August 7th CBA meeting, I was notified in September by the BACB that the review committee met on September 10th to review the notices of alleged violations against Mr. Oliver. The BACB provided me with a copy of the disciplinary determination document, which is included in your memo, and indicated that the decision was made to suspend his BCBA certification for 1 year. And following that suspension period, he shall complete several corrective action measures to include mentoring with the BACB and continue education. That suspension remains into effect until September of 2021. BACB did note that Mr. Oliver did not appeal the decision, and I do want to note that he promptly notified me of their decision as well. Additionally, I obtained the documentation from CARD that the committee requested back in August, which included any and all supervision records and a list of clients seen by Mr. Oliver from January to July of 2020. That list reflected that Mr. Oliver saw 15 clients total. I did obtain the 5 client records randomly from that list and noted that the billing records for several of these clients indicated that Mr. Oliver provided adaptive behavior treatment/therapy. All of these records are included within the file for today's meeting. At my request, Mr. Oliver's 2 supervisors from CARD, Ms. Brianne Krakora and Ms. Marina Balkan, who are both licensed behavior analysts, are present today to answer any questions that the committee might have as it relates to Mr. Oliver's job duties and responsibilities, as the committee had previously mentioned that they wanted to learn more about his duties from the supervisors directly. I believe that Mr. Oliver is also present today. And I just want to note, when the committee is reviewing the qualifications of licensure for an applicant under ARS 32-20091.02, the committee may want to reference the following subsections when determining if he meets the requirements. Section 3, be of good moral character. Section 6, not have committed any act or engage in any conduct that would constitute grounds for disciplinary action against the licensee pursuant to this article. And Section 7, not have any professional license or certification revoked, refused, suspended, or restricted in any regulatory jurisdiction in the United States. And this concludes my summary. Please let me know if there are any questions. We do have Ms. Galvin here if the committee needs any legal advice. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Martinson. I fully appreciate the report, you know, not only verbally, but what you provided to us in writing. It was extremely helpful in fully re-engage in this matter and understanding the issues that are at hand that the committee needs to weigh. So with that, I do appreciate the supervisors being here. I think that there may be some questions that we have for them with regard to this matter. Dr. Sinhoff, Dr. Rates, if you have any, please let me know. I do have a couple that I've noted. So if the supervisors are on, they can unmute themselves so we can have a little bit of a discussion. And the purpose of my
Marina Bolkin here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
Fran's here too.
Thank you. Thank you, Brianna. Thank you, Ms. Bolkin. So my questions are around really your supervision of this individual. When you were supervising him, was he acting as a BCBA? Was he the lead? Was he doing protocol modification? Was he engaged in activities that are commensurate with that of a behavior analyst versus that of a tech? And that's not really, you know, that's the purpose of that question is he should know better, and was he truthful with you about what activities he could engage in? Brianne or Ms. Bolkin?
I would share in Colton's work with us, he did do tasks that would fall under the responsibilities of a BCBA for patients in New Mexico that he was supporting as part of his CSD clinical supervisor designee training. He was doing some tasks with patients to help Brianne Krikora as the supervising BCBA in all of the cases. So for his Arizona teams, he was doing direct treatment with patients and doing the work of a BI, behavior interventionist, behavior technician, with all of his work supervised by Brianne. But there was a caseload of patients in New Mexico where Colton was taking on some of the primary supervisory responsibilities under the supervision of the clinical managers for those New Mexico centers.
So let's focus where we have jurisdiction, which is in Arizona. So in Arizona, is it your statement today that he was engaged only as a behavior technician?
No, not only as a behavior. The tasks that he was doing that we were billing for across the payers was definitely work as a behavior technician, and everything was supervised by Brianne Krikora as the licensed BCBA for those patients. But for other work that Colton was doing for part of his salary position, he was going through training as a clinical supervisor designee, which would have included reviewing and updating behavior intervention plans, reviewing and updating treatment plans. That was kind of done in conjunction with the billable tasks that he was doing in terms of direct treatment. So he was going through training to become a supervisor at CARD with whatever patient-specific tasks might go along with that, while doing a good amount of direct treatment with patients as well.
Thank you. My second question is, how long did you work with Mr. Oliver?
He worked with CARD for 8 months in 2020.
During those 8 months in your interactions with him, did he at any point confide in you that he had any misgivings about performing as a behavior analyst without a license in the state of Arizona?
No, not with me.
Me either.
And when you, how are you alerted to Mr. Oliver's matters that are pending before the board? Was that from him? Did you find out from your employer?
I had, after checking in several times, I had, which was Googled, Arizona licensure in Colton, and found the denial from January 20th. And that was in July, and he hadn't said anything about it. And then he notified me that his license was in review for the August meeting, so I attended that, where I found and heard more information, but hadn't been told until after the board meeting of that week of the issues at hand.
Dr. Davey, I don't think we can hear you.
Oh, Dr. Stenhoff, Dr. Rates, you guys have any further questions?
Yeah, Dr. Davey, if I may. So the job requirements for the clinical supervisor, what are the credentialing requirements for that job that he was in training for?
We do require a board certified behavior analyst certificate for anybody that we hire into that position. In the state of Arizona, since there's a licensing requirement, we wait for that license to be approved before that person jumps in to do a lot of those tasks. But we do require the BCBA license across CARD for anybody in the clinical supervisor designee position.
Okay. And just to clarify, you use the word license. Do you mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean certificate.
Certificate. Okay. I just want to make sure that, yeah, we're square there. And then I guess to what extent was he supervised while he was performing those duties? You indicated that he was doing a lot of those tasks that were similar to what a BCBA might do, but since he was in a licensed behavior analyst, to what extent was he supervised while he was engaging in the tasks that he was assigned to do for the training?
Brian, maybe you can speak as his supervisor through the, so as our clinical supervisor designees are going through their supervisor training, then they're working with a local mentor from their office. They're also working with mentors from our training department who they're meeting with regularly to receive feedback, ask questions, and get support on those cases. So I don't know, Brian, if you want to share any specific examples.
We had mentor meetings and we'd go over cases. And just the ideas that he had or areas that a patient might be struggling in. And then I would, like any other behavior tech, I would observe sessions and give feedback, discuss areas that need to be improved with Colton. And then ultimately, I would make the final say, but there were check-ins both in observation of it, of him performing therapy or parent training, and then also meeting outside of those sessions to discuss anything.
Okay. All right. Thank you. The last question I have, at least for now, was he representing himself to CARD or clients located in the state of Arizona as a behavior analyst? At least from your opinion or observation.
Yeah, when Colton applied to CARD, his resume did list him as a BCBA, board certified behavior analyst. That was why we interviewed for the position and hired him for the position to begin with.
Okay, and the reason I ask is I noted in some of the correspondence with email, Mr. Oliver's credentials, one of them is listed as a BCBA. And in the state of Arizona, you can't represent yourself as a behavior analyst unless you are in fact licensed. And so I was just curious Was he presenting himself as a behavior analyst to clients within the state? And that would be concerning if that was actually the case. So that's my, Dr. Davey, I'm done with my questions.
Thank you. Dr. Reitz, anything to add?
No, my questions have been covered. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Any other, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion that we move into executive session for legal advice from Ms. Galvin.
I'll second.
Give me one moment. I need to create a breakout room.
And we do need to take a vote.
Oh, yes, we do. I need to have that. It's already been seconded. All in favor of moving to executive session, say aye.
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 For those that are on the call, you guys will remain in the main. Well, everybody's getting pretty used to this on Zoom. You guys will remain in the main meeting room, and the committee members, as well as our serving attorney general, Ms. Galvin, and board staff will move to a private room to have legal advice. So please stand by.
Jennifer, if you need assistance with creating the breakout room, if you want to make me the host, I can do that.
Okay. I can try to do it here. Do I do add room or open all rooms, Heidi?
Do add a room.
Okay.
And you'll see, something that indicates create it manually.
Right.
Back to the committee members, Ms. Michelson and Ms. Galvin. I see that Dr. Reitz is present, Dr. Stenhoff, myself, Ms. Galvin, and do I see Ms. Michelson yet? Yes, there she is.
I'm here.
There you're present and accounted for. So thank you very much. The committee has returned from receiving legal advice in executive session. At this time, I know we have others that have joined this call, and I want to make sure I offer the opportunity for them to speak if they so choose. First, I do believe that we have legal counsel representing CARD present. If there's any comments that you would like to make, now would be the appropriate time, Marky.
No, nothing further. Thank you, Dr. Davey.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Mr. Oliver, I see that you are also present. If there is anything you'd like to add to the discussion, now would be the appropriate time. You are muted. You are now unmuted. Thank you, Mr.
Oliver. At this time, Dr. Davey.
Thank you. Oh, were you confirming that you did not want to speak?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. Thank you so much. With that, are there any, I just want to be clear, anybody else on the call that has wishes to speak to this matter? I see a lot of names. I just want to make sure we're not missing anyone. Going once, going twice. All right. We'll now move into deliberations with the committee members to discuss the matter. This is a time for us as committee members to have a discussion and to move forward with any particular motions that may be set forth. So with that, I will begin the discussion. I think and this is a matter now that's been in front of this committee for several months. I think if we kind of look at the historical piece of this, it was brought to us that this is a talented young BCBA that had a lapse in judgment. That lapse in judgment was severe enough that it was, disclosed to not only the National Certifying Board, but here to us in the state of Arizona as the regulator in the state of behavior analysts. I think many of us on this committee believed, and even for the board of psychological examiners, believed that Mr. Oliver had made an error, showed remorse, and was going to work through that. And then as time marches on, 2 months after that, we receive another application for this individual. And during the committee questions, Mr. Oliver, the applicant, at that particular point as to what did you do to remediate the issues that the committee initially saw and moved to the board to deny your initial application? What have you done to better understand your ethical obligations as a not only nationally certified behavior analyst, but as a licensed behavior analyst? And the answers were CEUs, and I've reformed. But the reality is there's been no, in my opinion, no effort to remediate those deficiencies ethically. And that is extremely concerning to me. That is concerning to the point that this committee, as well as the Board of Psychological Examiners, our primary task is to protect the public. That is our primary task. And in this case, the public is not served by an individual, a professional individual, that is unwilling to understand that they have a deficit with their ethics, and that they have a deficit in understanding their roles and responsibilities as a behavior analyst, whether it be licensed or certified. And with that, I believe that this committee has really no other option other than to deny this application. And I will stop there and let the other committee members provide their reaction to this matter as well. Thank you. Dr. Stenhoff, you've unmuted yourself.
Yeah, so Dr. Davy, just reviewing some of the statutes, one of the issues, and you alluded to this in your comments, one is being of good moral character. I think the misrepresentation that was evidenced in the documentation from the credentials list and the signature conveying that information, it appeared to the general public in the state of Arizona, it was problematic. The other concern I had is at this point too, you had a discussion to recommend that we not move forward with licensure. And when looking at the statute as well, one of the statutes recommends that the professional license or there cannot have a certification restricted or suspended. And at this point, Mr. Oliver's certification to practice, it has been suspended by the BACB. And so that's another concern that I had. So I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. Dr. Reitz.
I would agree with my fellow committee members. I think it is quite concerning that it appears that there continues to be unprofessional behavior in terms of just representation. And I would agree with what the other committee members have suggested. And Chairman, wonder if we want to move into a motion or if there's further discussion that we want to make here.
If you've got a motion, I'm happy to entertain it.
Okay, well, I would make a motion that we recommend to the full board that we deny this application on the basis of looking at the statute 32.2091.02, specifically number 3 to the point of moral character that we've discussed here already in terms of misrepresentation, number 6, which refers to conduct related and constitute grounds for disciplinary action. Again, looking at professional conduct, misrepresentation to employer. And then number 7, which Dr. Stenhoff noted, the individual does have a certificate that has been suspended.
So if I'm hearing this correctly, under 3, being of good moral character, I mean, the specifics of that matter are 1, inappropriate billing, 2, inappropriate use of a credential, fraudulent, forging a signature of a parent. I mean, these are all things that we had that we have issues with in terms of the individual's character. So, I mean, I think in terms of specifics around that, is that kind of what we're driving towards?
Is there any conduct in 32-2091-6-12 that you believe he engaged in that would justify his denial under subparagraph 6? Making or using statements of a character tending to deceive or mislead. That my understanding, what I'm hearing from you, is something that could be supported by the record with respect to his qualifications, if that's something that the committee is interested in considering.
So this would be under unprofessional conduct 15C, making or using statements of character tending to deceive or mislead?
12C, yes.
12C. Sorry, I might be in the psychology side. 12C. Exactly. Yes, I believe that those are, I'll entertain what other committee members are hearing. I think that C is an issue there around his moral character. I also believe professional confidences have been burned in terms of his moral character. I mean, if I'm supervising this individual and being told half-truths, that is difficult for me to wrap my head around. It puts everyone in jeopardy, from the families to the child, to the other professionals working around and supporting him. So I would entertain under 12B, C. I don't know that we have enough information around J about a fraudulent or untrue statement to the board or its investigators. But I'll tell you, in my opinion, it's damn close on some of these half-truths that we heard over the course of our discussion of his application over the last couple months. I think that the record clearly shows some half-truths in Mr. Colton's statements to us, both written in terms of his application to employers, as well as verbally to us. And so I think that, and then obviously DD, which is violating an ethical standard adopted by the board. This board has adopted the code of conduct from the BACB. That code of conduct includes BACB recommendations 1.04 under integrity. I think we have some significant issues around integrity for this particular applicant. I think going down through the BACB code of conduct, we also have issues with accuracy in billing reports, which is 2.13. And then I think we also have some issues on the ethical side that the BACB pulls out in 10.02, which is, oh, I'm sorry, not 10.02, but just 10.01, truthful and accurate information. But I guess that's provided to the BACB. So maybe we've already hit that in his untrue statements to us. So I guess I'll hold off on the recommendation of 10, as that has to do with responsibility to the BACB, and that would be their purview.
Dr. Davey, the one thing I do want to comment that might be applicable to 10.01, when his initial licensure application was denied in 2020, he did not report that to the BACB, and that was part of their disciplinary determination back in September that he failed to notify them.
I stand corrected. Then obviously we have an issue then there with timely responding and reporting and updating information to the BACB, which we are bound to as certificates. And we are bound to as licensed behavior analysts of the state because of our adoption of this code of conduct. So I would be comfortable with that being in there as well.
Do any other committee members want to add any additional alleged violations or any specific examples of conduct that you believe support the alleged violations?
Maybe to add one more from the BACB's guidelines, 1.04A, behavior analysts are truthful and honest and range the environment. I know we've talked about that as well, but if we want to tie in to the certifying body, that might be one to add.
I believe I listed 1.04. I was actually, when I made that recommendation, I was speaking of all of its subsets underneath there. But if we need to list out A, B, C, D, and E, we can go through those. But
that's probably the best.
Okay. So A reads behavior analysts are truthful and honest in their behavior and others. So I think that there's multiple violations there, and his honesty to not only to us as committee looking at his application and the information provided on that application, but to his employers as well. So definitely A. B to me is borderline, because again, he's got supervisors that believe he has a certain level of ability to practice. And the reality is that that ability is not there. And in doing so, he puts his supervisors at risk. So B to me is, and I would also say the agency then bills inappropriately and receives funding for that. So to me, B is also a violation. Behavior analysts do not implement contingencies that would cause others to engage in fraudulent, illegal, or unethical conduct. And so I believe he's breached that as well.
Perhaps D.
Yeah, D, I'm just reading through them and wrapping my head around them. D, definitely behavior analysts' behavior conforms to the legal and ethical codes of the social and professional community of which they are members. We actually have already pointed out that 10.02A was a violation. And then the last, E, for behavior analysts' ethical responsibilities conflict with the law or any policy. No, I don't believe that that's an issue. So I'm comfortable with the ones we just outlined. Mm-hmm. Other comments or other things that we would need to respond to, Ms. Galvin, in terms of the motion that's on the table to deny?
No, I can restate the motion if you want.
I think that would be beneficial for us, yes.
And if it's clear for the record, the committee has moved to make a recommendation to the full board to deny the application of Colton Oliver based on 32.2091.02 part 3, 6, and 7 as it relates to 2091.12b and c. And B and C, and then based on the ethical code. Just a second. DD, as well as it relates to the ethical code of 1.04A, B, and D, 2.13, 10.01, 10.02.
I believe so.
And who made that motion? Dr. Ray?
We will need a second.
Yeah, I'll second.
Thank you for that. We have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion as it relates to this matter?
And we will need a roll call vote because it is a recommended discipline.
Any other discussion? Thank you. So at this point, we'll go ahead and call the question. It'll be a roll call. Ms. Michelson, do you want to do that?
Sure, Dr. Davey. Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Davis-Wilson? Dr. Raitz?
Yes.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Yes.
Motion carries. So Mr. Oliver's application will be forwarded to the next board meeting on November 6th with the recommendation by the committee to deny. So we will be sending him a notice here in the near future.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Michelson, will the BACB also receive notice of our findings?
Yes, they will, the board's final determination.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for everyone for joining today regarding this particular agenda item. You can log off at any time or listen to the rest of the meeting. Thank you.
All right, I want to go back and find my agenda here. Hold on. All right, so we just concluded number six. I believe if Ms. Michelson, if you are up for it, we will go now to number five. Does that sound?
Yes, that works perfectly. Thank you.
All right, let's go with discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendations to the board pertaining to the approval of behavior analyst applicants. Under section A, we have behavior analyst application for licensure. First up is Austin Sargent. Dr. Stenhoff, you are on the lead. Are you the lead on this matter? Please, please kick us off.
Okay. I want to note that I was Mr. Sargent's instructor while he was a student at Arizona State, but can review his application without bias. Mr. Sargent received his BCBA on June of 2020, graduated in May of 2020 from Arizona State University with a Master of Science in Applied Behavior Analysis. He received 1,712 hours of supervision under Jamie Jersch, Caitlin Wittig, and Aaron Cook, who are all LBAs in Arizona. And I did not note any concerns with this application and would recommend that it be forwarded to the board for approval.
Thank you, Mr. Stenhoff. I did not notice anything either that was out of the ordinary. Dr. Rates is saying the same, non-verbally, but I will take that. Thank you very much. We will move on to the second applicant, Brianna. I'm going to mess this up, but I'm going to do my best. Mosca, I am the lead on this, and so I will give a brief overview. Ms. Mosca is coming forward for licensure. She became a board certified behavior analyst in November of 2017. She responded to her application in full, unless Dr. Stenhoff's going to note something that I missed, which is his prerogative. The individual received her supervised experience while in California, as noted by board staff insert, and many of us know, California does not have licensure, and so licensure requirements are not in place during supervision. The individual had over 1,500 hours attested by for her supervisors, and I see no issues with this application. Other committee members? You sure, Dr. Stenhoff?
Yeah, I think we're good on this. Thanks for checking, though, Dr. Davey.
You called my bluff so many times. All right, very good. Moving on to number three, Heather Phillips. Dr. Rates, you are the lead.
Yes, so Ms. Phillips received BCBA certification in June of 2020. She also indicated that she is licensed by the state as a teacher. She received her master's in education at ASU between 2016 and 2018. All supervision occurred at Mesa Public Schools under the supervision of Terry Wright, who is the licensed behavior analyst, for a total of 1,534 hours. I did not note any issues with this application and would recommend it move forward.
Very good. Not hearing any other concerns, Dr. Stenhoff. I have no concerns about this application. If not, Dr. Rates, you're on a roll. We'll just continue with you.
Sounds good. So next applicant, Hope, received a BCBA in 2020, September. Received a MS at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology between August of 2017 and June of 2020. Supervision occurred at Hope Autism Therapies, which was in California, for a total of 1,526 hours. This was supervised by BCBA, but as we've already said here today, California does not have licensure. I did anything with this application.
Neither did I. Dr. Stenhoff? All right, very good. We're on a roll here. I'm just very proud of the applicants for following all the directions and getting through the process. So kudos thus far. Moving on, Dr. Stenhoff, you've got two in a row. So let's start with Raquel K. De Jesus, and you have the floor.
All right. So Ms. De Jesus received her BCBA in June of 2020. She graduated in May of 2015 from Arizona State University. The Master of Education, Curriculum, and Instruction. She received 1,609.5 hours supervision under Andrew Gardner, Trina Spencer, Dan Davidson, Brian Van Meerten, all who are BCB or LBAs in the state of Arizona, and I did not note any concerns in this application. I recommend being moved forward to the board for full approval.
Very good. I did not note anything, Dr. Rates. Okay, I'm good. All right, so moving on. Let's see if I can toggle fast enough here. Dr. Stenhoff, you're up again.
All right. So this is the application of Sonia Tim. Ms. Tim received her BCBA in February of 2014. She graduated in May of 2013 from San Diego State University with a Master of Arts in Education. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under Lynn Wilson in California. As we've said, there is no licensure requirement for supervisors or BCBAs in the state of California. So I didn't note any concerns, and I'd recommend this move forward.
Very good. I did not note anything on this TEMS application either. Dr. Rates, I assume no. Yes, you're indicating no. Very good. Dr. Rates, you are up for Ms. Maria Antoinette Land.
Yes, thank you. And I think, if I'm correct, is she here today?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for joining us. Dr. Davy, is now an appropriate time to allow her to make a statement?
Absolutely, and just kind of as a frame of reference for those on the call and for Ms. Land, last time the committee convened, we reviewed your application. You had noted information on there that we typically like to speak to applicants about, and that's the reason we tabled your application and invited you to attend today's meeting. And so that's kind of the backdrop of this. Ms. Rates, you can feel free to engage in the conversation.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Should I wait?
No, please go ahead.
So you just kind of want me to tell you what happened regarding that event, or?
Yes. So I, if you can just share with us, I know that you did submit a larger statement. So thank you for that. If you can just kind of share with us a bit about the event, where you are now.
Sounds good. So yes, I did write quite a lengthy letter, but I'll try to keep it short for you. Long story short, I had a couple of troubling years, and this event happened my senior year of undergrad in Reno. I was 21. It was my first semester of finals week. I was in a bad relationship. I was dealing with a lot of emotional things. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
And I went to the bar. I had a very strong drink and suspected my partner at the time was cheating on me. And I went and checked. So I drove my car and he was, I did see that. And I saw someone else's car there and I was frazzled. I was upset and I had had a strong drink in my system. I went to leave and there's a street in Reno that is a two-way street, but it turns into a one-way street. You're supposed to turn left there and I turned right. I was just about to correct my mistake. And I remember a highway patrol officer, actually, I remember her screaming, "Hey," out the window. And I looked over and I already knew. So I was pulled over and, you know, had to do all of those horrible things. And it was awful. And I know that it was a horrible decision, and it has come up a couple of times, and it's hard to reopen this box, but I understand that it's necessary. And I also appreciate that the board does look so hard into these things, because it's important that we have, you know, good BCBAs out there and people that can live a stable life and be able to provide services.
Ms. Land, I will chime in quickly, and I very much appreciate you coming to the meeting. I know that these things are tough, and in reviewing your recent account of the incident, it does match what I reviewed in all of the other documents. So thank you for that. I also noted that in your application, you responded no to questions 21 and 22, indicating that you feel that you don't have anything that impairs your ability to provide services as a behavior analyst. Again, in what I reviewed, it appeared that this was just under 5 years ago. Can you confirm you haven't had any other instances that are similar in nature in the last 5 years?
Yes, I can confirm that that has not happened. I forgot to tell you, you asked me also where I'm at now. I obviously went to grad school. I got my master's degree. I got my BCBA in June, and I'm in a really healthy relationship with someone who has a six-year-old son. I take my work very seriously, and it's my hope to help people learn and grow so they don't have to go through horrible situations like this. So hopefully I can continue providing services and help people get to their best potential.
Dr. Davey, I'm prepared to just review the application again, if that would be a good next step, or if there are others on the committee that would like to ask Ms. Land any further questions, I can certainly wait.
I have no further questions, Dr. Senhoff.
No, I don't have any questions. I wanted to just confirm, I noted the graduation date on page 4 of the PDF didn't match the documentation on page 2 of the PDF. I know not a big deal, but that may need to be corrected.
I did send a corrected version to Kathy. Is that what you're...
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course.
Okay. If there aren't any further questions, then I'll go ahead and just do another review of this application. So Ms. Land received her BCBA in June of 2020. She has a master's in special education from the U of A, received supervision for a total of 1,519 hours. Again, we've already followed up with the question 12. And I believe that the information, the additional information that we've received matches all of the documents. I appreciate that Ms. Land sent in so much documentation, and also just want to recognize the lengths with which she has gone to remedy that situation, further her education, and move forward. And we appreciate that and certainly do not want to let that go unsaid. In reviewing this, as I indicated, Ms. Land reported in 21 and 22 that she does not feel that there's anything that would make it difficult for her to provide the service and to work as a BCBA, and there have been no additional incidents in the last 5 years. So I do not have concerns and would recommend that we move this forward. And again, thank you for being here. We really appreciate your participation.
Thank you so much.
I have no concerns, Dr. Senhoff. No concerns, I assume.
Nope.
All right, let's move on to, and I would just also echo what Dr. Wright said. Ms. Land, thank you so much. We appreciate you coming and speaking to us, mm-hmm. and look forward to your long career as a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona. Dr. Senhoff, Ms. Duffy is next on the list.
So Ms. Duffy received her BCBA in September of 2020. She graduated in May of 2020 from Arizona State University with a Master of Arts in Special Education. received 1,529.26 hours of supervision in Arizona under Michelle Mackey, who is an LBA, and I did not note any concerns and recommend that this be moved forward to the board for approval.
Very good. Noticing from nonverbal behavior that everybody's in agreement. All right. So with that, do we need to take A as a separate motion before we get to B, or can we do them together, Ms. Pakkanen?
I would take that group as a separate motion.
Okay, so we need a motion to move those applicants forward. Dr. Stenhoff, Dr. Reitz?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that applicants from 5.A1 through 8 move forward to the board for approval.
I will second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you very much. Moving on to section B, behavior analyst application for licensure under universal recognition.
First, Dr. Davey, if I may, we do have at least one of the applicants under this section who is present. So Ms. Hickerson may wish to address the committee or not.
Okay. Should we review the application first and then see if there's need for that?
Yes, please.
All right. Let's, Dr. Reitz. Your show.
Yes. So I have reviewed the application. Ms. Hickerson has an active license in Louisiana, and that has been in place for over a year, been active since 16. There was a lease submitted to indicate residency. The only question that I had in review of the application was that for question one, residency was answered both yes and no. So I think I need a little further clarification from the applicant on why both yes and no were checked in that box. But apart from that, the application was complete.
Very good. Well, then I guess that opens the door for comments from Ms. Hickerson on that.
Hi. So I submitted the application when I had signed a lease for Arizona, but was still living in New Orleans. And I was in the process of moving, and I wanted to be as truthful as possible.
Well, we appreciate that very much.
I am now currently living in Santan Valley at the leased location.
Wonderful. Thank you for that clarification. Board staff, Chairman, I imagine we just need to have that adjusted so it has yes on the application. Is that correct?
I don't know. I mean, I guess, yeah, it's up to board staff, but that probably can't answer both, although she is being truthful at that point. So
yes,
it's at board staff's discretion of what they'd like to have done forward with that application box.
I think you could just put a note in the file that she testified today to the discrepancy.
Excellent. Then I would recommend that we move this forward based on that note of clarification.
Very good. All right, moving forward, we have another application by Universal Recognition. This one was assigned to me. One second while I get there. So many windows open. All right, we have Ms. Teresa Carden, PhD, coming forward for license by Universal Recognition. I will just note that the first page is really blurry. I don't know that board staff, if we need to get that cleaned up for the record. Everything you can clearly see is marked, though, that they've agreed. I just don't see it as initials. And so I would just think for clarity, we would want those to actually look like initials versus dots. Ms. Carden has had an active license in the state of Utah, where she has operated as a behavior analyst for quite some period of time. As proof of her residency, she produced a Arizona driver's license, which was issued 12/27 of 2019. Given her the information provided, she appears to have met the statute requirements to receive a license under Universal Recognition. Any other comments? No. So just an administrative matter with making sure that we can see that those are initials on the first page would be my only comment. I will entertain a motion for Section B.
I'll make a motion that Julie Hickerson and Teresa Carden move forward for approval from the board.
I will second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Thank you very much, committee members, for your work in reviewing those applications. I know that takes time and effort, and I appreciate your diligence in this matter. Moving ahead, we're going to start rifling through some matters here. Let's just kick right down the list, if that's okay with board staff. We'll start with number 7, discussion, consideration, and possible actions regarding allegations of professional conduct concerning behavior analysts identified in investigative record for complaint 2101. I will make a comment to that. That matter is going to be pushed off to the next committee meeting, which will be, I believe, December 3rd. Ms. Michelson, is that correct?
That's correct. So we'll put it on that agenda when all of the committee members are present.
Very good. And so we will do that with our full complement of behavior analysts that serve on this committee. So that will, any other items around number 7, or can I move on, Ms. Michelson?
You can move on. Thank you.
Thank you. And number 8, discussion, consideration, possible action on draft revisions to behavior analyst application for licensure. Kathy, you are the star of the show.
Mr. Chair, committee members, as you know, you've wanted to make some changes to the behavior analyst application. Dr. Davey sent me a Word document with some suggested changes, and I uploaded that to the website. Hopefully you've been able to download it and look at it, and it's open for your discussion.
Thank you. So I'll just kind of kick us off. I last time we just did not have time to get to this matter, both functionally and just in terms of our show workload around the last CBA committee meeting. And so Kathy had asked that we take some time to review that. Hopefully you had a chance to kind of look at it. I did send her just some track changes, which she did upload to the portal for review, but really this is your guys' chance to take a look at this as well and make any comments. Kathy can in real time, I believe, jot down the edits that we are suggesting. So if you guys wanna kind of make sure you've got that open, and then whichever one of you would like to start with any comments or feedback, that would be great. Or I
did have a chance.
I can walk through the recommendations I made if you'd like.
I was just going to indicate that I did have a chance to review it, and I didn't have any additional feedback. I did appreciate your comments, Dr. Davey, particularly around adding some clarity given possible situations that have come up for people surrounding COVID. So thank you for those thoughtful additions, but I didn't have any to add for me.
And I concur. And some of the edits, the other edits that were highlighted on there, moving from start date to date of matriculation was a nice move, because I don't think most people know what that word means. not negatively, but yeah, it's a dated word. So.
Kathy, were there other, did Dr., I'm guessing Dr. Davis Wilson did probably not get a chance to submit any kind of discussion, right?
Yes, she's had the opportunity. Granted, she's been preoccupied.
Yeah.
I did have one request that I noticed recently. We have question 22 and 23 are those confidential questions about impairment or psychological, medical, physical, or psychological condition. That's a professional conduct question as well. And so I was kind of thinking we could move that to be with where it says, you know, if answering yes to any questions below, please attach that 9 through 14. And then I think those two should go under there, because those all need, if they answer yes, they need to provide an explanation and documentation. And so I think it would be, make more sense for it to go under the section that asks for an explanation and documentation.
Yeah, either that, or we have to put that header there again before 22 and 23. I mean, right. does it make sense? I mean, you've got a header there that they're confidential, and Ms. Galvin may still be listening, but do we just need to add the section that they need to respond in writing? Because we've kind of called those out because they are confidential, if I remember correctly, under 22 and 23. So I fully understand what you're saying, but I don't know if they need that kind of header that discloses that they are confidential and will not be discussed to the public.
The benefit of, Dr. Davey, the benefit of including that may provide some, make them a little more comfortable to disclose that. And I know yeah. there is an expectation of honesty, but, you know, we've got an establishing operation there that may influence a response other mm-hmm. than that.
So I think to kind of summarize, is Ms. Galvin on the call or she it looks like maybe she might have stepped away. I guess, Kathy, I would just be somewhat uneasy moving them just as number 15 and number 16, given that the header for that section doesn't fully convey the fact that this would be confidential and not open to public discussion. So I'd probably be more apt to say, could we cut and copy the separate sheet of paper and provide a copy of appropriate supporting documentation being added to the header before 22 and 23?
Okay, thank you. That sounds great.
Committee member, by no means am I the best copy editor. I'm just trying to give a suggestion there. I'm not wed to it by any means, but I do get nervous that those probably do need to be called out.
Yeah, I mean, the other option could that be added in parentheses to that question, those two questions underneath that same section. But I don't know if that will be salient enough. To your point, Dr. Stenhoff, I do think it's important that that be very clear. So perhaps another option, but again, would want to make sure that it is very clear.
The other, and this is more procedural, but while they may not be disclosed to the public, it appears that they are, because we, in our discussions with applicants who have visited, it's a question that comes up directly to them, whether they're in that position. That might be a discussion for another time, but if they are in fact not disclosed, then I don't think we can discuss those questions and ask where they're at in a public forum. But again, that might be a discussion to be had some other time.
I believe, and Ms. Galvin's here, I believe the disclose to public does not necessarily mean that the yes or no question is there. I think it's in the record that's available that the supporting documents are not disclosed. I mean, the yes, no is part of the public record, I believe.
Go ahead, Jean, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Dr. Davey, committee members, those yes-no answers are redacted.
Okay.
The entire block will be redacted, so no one knows which answer was given. If someone ever requests a copy of the record, and when you're discussing, if someone were to answer that, and you're discussing it in open meeting, you'd actually end up going to executive session, because those matters are confidential. Mm-hmm.
Very good. And so I think, you know, hearing more of that and understanding it's redacted, I'm leaning more towards leaving that as a call out, leaving them as 22 and 23 and having you add to the header section the need for them to provide additional supporting documentation.
Okay. Thank you.
Seeing as Galvin, you came back and we already answered all the questions.
Darn it. I had to take a comfort break.
There'll be no comfort today.
Dr. Davey, Ms. Folks, you just indicated that you would go to executive session. And again, I don't want to get too far down this road. I'd like to have a conversation about perhaps in the future. But if this conversation were to occur in a meeting, would the applicant and the committee go to executive session? Is that what you're suggesting?
That's what happens. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
We've just never had that occur on this committee where we're talking about, you know, current addiction or current medical conditions that you would not disclose in open forum. That has happened on the psychology board side where we end up going and having a discussion, looking at confidential medical records. That never happens in public. And in fact, Jean chastises us every single time we even mention a diagnosis.
Okay. So the question about whether you're in that position anymore is a different question than.
Yeah. Are you currently addicted? Because the question is a current addiction.
And if that issue would arise, staff would notify us and we would be sure to frame the questions so we don't disclose the issue in open session, only then to go into executive session to discuss it. So we could say we're adjourning to executive session to consider confidential health information.
And we actually did have this discussion around a medical marijuana card for an individual. And the individual, I believe the individual was okay with us discussing it versus going into executive session.
Correct.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Other comments on the application?
Dr. Davey, I do want to just give a little update relative to the application process in general. Once these changes are finalized in this PDF version, we'll still operate our application intake process using this application, but we're also supplying it to the support team of the e-licensing system, because we are hoping that by the end of the calendar year, we will restore the BA applications to the e-licensing system. It will take much more time and effort for the psychologist applications, but we think that this we can accomplish at least this much, which will be a huge time saver for board staff, because intake right now is very labor intensive. So shifting that to the e-licensing portal, hopefully by January, I think you'll see a remarkable difference in timing and the formatting of the materials.
Thank you so much.
And Ms. Pakenon, will that make you and your staff less burdened with reviewing things, or with that moving to that format?
Dr. Stenhoff, that's a great question. To some degree, yes, because the much of the process of submitting materials will shift to the applicant instead of, you know, coming to us and us, you know, managing those files really in an external fashion. So yes, it's going to create some quite a few efficiencies.
Glad to hear that for you guys.
Very good. Any other discussion around the application? Kathy, any other comments, or are we good?
I believe, if I'm understanding you correctly, that the committee wants to implement all of your suggestions that you made.
I mean, I think if individuals have looked at those comments, I mean, I think most of them was just changing a number, the order, which was actually your recommendation, Kathy, not mine, and I agreed with you, so I just put it in writing for you to move the questions around that pertains to 5, 6, and 7. Yeah. I think just, you know, calling out that if you're going to respond yes, that you should expect to also attend the CBA meeting, not only provide us supporting documentation, but you know, you probably plan to attend when your license is being reviewed. And I don't know, and I guess Ms. Galvin, 14, if you're looking at my comments, 14 is, have you ever been involuntarily terminated, or have you resigned in lieu of termination from any behavioral health position or related employment? And my comment to that was several agencies that employ behavior analysts and behavior techs had to experience furloughs, and those would be involuntarily terminated due to COVID. And I'm just wondering if we're going to get some people that disclose, like, hey, my agency had to let me go in March because the center was shut down, and then we're going to have some that don't disclose that, if we're opening ourselves up to just some difficulties in making sure we have the pertinent information on the application. So that comment under 14, I just didn't know, you know, what the implications of kind of the reduction in force due to COVID might have on respondees and applicants.
And I don't know what kind of impact it would have, but I would think that if they answered yes and then explained that it was a reduction in force due to the pandemic, that kind of issue would not be brought before you.
And I'm just, and again, I don't want to add to the applicant, but just, I guess if we start to see those, maybe it's just involuntary and a checkbox due to COVID, so we don't have to have lots of extra paperwork supporting that. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't know that that's coming. I'm just having, you know, seen some of the things that are going on nationally, that it would not surprise me if we're going to get some RBTs to come forward and say they were terminated involuntarily during this period. Or that they will not know to answer that, yes, they were. And that kind of concerns me as well. So just trying to figure out a way to make sure we're getting the information we're interested in.
Dr. Davey, on number 14 as well, I'm noting the last phrasing related employment in committee members. What is that referring? What would a related employment example be? And why I'm asking is, as services expand in the state of Arizona and as they have in nationally, we have students and people that are working strictly in the OBM field, and they may not be related anything with behavioral health. Would that fall in? So if they're doing an internship or working with, let's just say, AT&T, but in an OBM capacity, how might they answer that? But if they're acting under a behavior analytic framework?
Then they got to answer that. Related to me is if they're engaged in the practice of applied behavior analysis, regardless of what setting you need to.
Okay. So would the elimination or the rephrasing of behavioral health position or related employment, maybe maintaining that or eliminating it and referring to within the industry of behavior analysis or using behavior analysis or something along those lines? And as you know, I'm hopeful that the field's expanding in the state of Arizona, which I believe it is, but I think just for clarification, in related employment, is it related to behavioral health? Is it not? You know, so I'm just, you know, a clear statement within that question or a broader statement, would that serve us better?
Ms. Galvin, is that language linked to statute or rule somewhere?
That I don't.
I don't know if it's going to like the good moral character questions and things like that. But Dr. Stenoff, if I'm understanding your edit, it would be, have you ever been involuntarily terminated or have you resigned in lieu of termination from any position related to applied behavior analysis or something?
Yeah, like the practice of applied behavior analysis or something along those lines, because then you would encompass, you know, those OBM related services and so on.
Well, and behavioral health definitely just takes one particular slice of what a behavior analyst could be.
Of the industries, yeah.
Now, then again, licensing.
Could be an EG. I don't know.
Well, but I also think like licensure, we're not licensing OBM BCBAs at this particular point. So some of the question is like, are licensing prerogative?
But for clarification, if I am conducting OBM and it's clear that I'm a BCBA in the state, can I operate in that industry without being licensed and say I am a behavior analyst?
I believe I'm going to have to go look at my rules, but I believe there are some exemptions that might hit.
If you get to the rule before I do, let me know. So.
I think it's a statute. I think it's a 0.08.
Statute. Did you say B in that?
No, I think she just said 08.
Okay, so I'm reading 08B, and the language in that indicates if you're not claiming to be a behavior analyst.
Yeah, Dr. Stenhoff, that language is pretty common in most professions, possibly all professions, practice acts, just to sort of, you know, distinguish, you know, professions from each other and to prevent anyone who is not licensed, you know, to claim that they are. So I don't know if that is quite on point with what you're describing.
So I want to head off if somebody is in fact practicing in the state of Arizona, has the certification credential BCBA, and is working for an industry outside of the behavioral health industry, and is saying they're a behavior analyst, would they come under scrutiny from this committee and the board for stating they are behavior analysts, but they are in fact not licensed?
I would say yes, because I read B as this article does not prevent a member of other recognized professions who is licensed, certified, or regulated under the laws of this state. So is that, I mean, and Gene, you can tell me that or, but does that mean they'd have to be certified by the state? This is not talking about a certification by a national organization.
Or no.
Is that laws of the state just for the regulated?
I would read B as, for instance, a psychologist could render ABA services because that's within their scope.
Okay, but they're licensed. But we would not allow just a certified behavior analyst to render the service.
No.
So that certification piece you have to still be regulated by Arizona's laws. So if you were a teacher, you're a certified teacher in the state of Arizona, mm-hmm. and you're engaged in providing reinforcement for appropriate responses and shaping and all of the things that are grounded in ABA, then you are allowed to do what you need to do.
Well, and I'm going to throw another piece in there too, but if I'm operating as a behavior analyst doing OBM, right, and I have a supervisee, I technically cannot provide supervision to a supervisee because I'm in fact not licensed in the state.
Correct.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is Kathy. One statute might be wanting to look at is 32-2091.12. That's the class 2 misdemeanor if they use this title or that title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Fox.
I don't know. I mean, I think to me, if the edit is agreeable, you know, have you ever been yada yada from any position related to the practice of applied behavior analysis, and that's probably more in line with what you're trying to say, correct? Does that solve your problem? So as long as we're not skirting some sort of statutory language that says behavioral health or related employment somewhere, then I would be okay with us fine-tuning that to be around the practice of applied behavior analysis, or the practice of behavior analysis as it's codified in our statutes under 3. Because yeah. Behavior analysis is defined under 32-2091.3.
Yeah. So I still walk away with the question, though. I mean, and that's not for this time, but I think there should be at least some clarification of whether, as an somebody who's serving in an industry outside of behavioral health, needs to in fact be licensed to practice in the state in an OBM capacity, for example, and is representing themselves as a behavior analyst, which your credential at the end of your name, a BCBA, does signify. So
um,
But maybe, and again, I know we're just talking about an application here, but that might be a discussion for later. But certainly as a instructor and supervisor, that'd be something to pass along. And I know Dr. Davis Wilson is an instructor with ethics. That's certainly something to address as well.
Ms. Galvin, I see no exemption that would say just because you're engaged in OBM, you don't need to be licensed. If you're in the state practicing behavior analysis, providing behavior analytic services under the definition, which clearly states, rearranging environments and different things like that that would fall under OBM, I don't see an exemption for an OBM person.
I would agree. The exemptions are pretty clearly articulated in 0.08.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I don't see where that would fall.
Yeah. I don't see that either.
Sort of doesn't matter where you work or where you apply your skills.
If you're using the science of applied behavior analysis, then you're under our jurisdiction in the state of Arizona.
So it seems like there's two things to think about. One would be to revise this question, and I think the way that you suggested, Dr. Davey, would make sense. And then perhaps the second piece is, as we've said before, some type of an educational piece, because I agree, as individuals are expanding into new spaces and areas, OBM being one of them, we want to make sure that they fully understand that just because they are not practicing in a behavioral health space, that according to our statute, that would still require them to be licensed. Mm-hmm. I wondered, going back to your point on the layoff versus involuntary termination question, is there value in thinking about breaking this up like we have others and adding sort of a subsection that could account for a layoff due to staff reduction or something like that? Would that be useful, or do we just want to leave it as it is and ask people to provide additional information?
Or you could say termination or release from a job for unprofessional conduct or whatever, term you would want to use, misconduct.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what we're trying to get to here is were you fired because you were fraudulently billing? Were you fired because you kept missing appointments? Were you terminated for something less than the standard of care, right? That's really what this is driving for.
Or for cause.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For cause. Yeah, maybe we just reword it that way.
Terminated for cause or resigned in lieu of that kind of, in lieu of that type of termination.
Dr. Davey, committee members, do you want me to read back the question as I've written it based on what you have said so far?
Yeah. Actually, but let Jean listen, so everybody be quiet.
Have you ever been involuntarily terminated, or have you resigned in lieu of termination for cause from any position related to the practice of applied behavior analysis as defined by ARS Section 32-2091? And I haven't gone to get the subsections, but I'll put that in later. Hmm.
Yeah.
I guess I would add the for cause. You've added it to the end of the second part, the or resignation in lieu of. I would also add for cause before the or.
Okay, I've got it.
So have you been terminated, blah, 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 for cause, or resigned in lieu of termination for cause?
Perfect. Okay.
Have you seen any applications yet that discuss termination because of a furlough or?
Not yet.
Rift, all right.
The next one, Dr. Davey, you had asked about question 11. What if the complaint was only the BACB? Do we need to clarify this?
Yes, so have you ever had a complaint, allegation, or investigation in another regulatory jurisdiction? So, Gene, a regulatory jurisdiction to me sounds like a state, territory, province. do we need to also include, you know, after or another, you know, or another or comma or, you know, comma, another country or to the national certifying body?
I would add the national certifying body because that's not entirely clear.
That was the end of my comments, I believe. So, any others from the team? All right. Kathy, are you comfortable with what you've gotten from us?
Yes, thank you.
Very good. Okay. See if I can find my agenda again. Every time I toggle around, I lose it. Okay, that concludes matter number, I believe, 8. Let's move to 9. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. Ms. Pacanon, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will be quick. No updates from the BACB since the last meeting.
Very good. That is quick. Wow, let's see if you can continue with that with number 10, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding licensure and regulatory issues related to COVID-19. Are we not so lucky on that one, huh?
I'll take 90 seconds, maybe. Okay. Really no updates, although I think that those of us who are in this meeting, who were fortunate to attend the annual meeting of ASPPB, we heard a lot of discussion from regulatory bodies related to the challenges of serving in that capacity, given COVID-19, given the pandemic. So once the summary of the meeting is issued, I will share it not only with the board, but also the members of this committee, you know, given your interest and in your attendance. So, you know, it might be informative, but I think what it's going to illustrate is that all jurisdictions are struggling, and you know, we can look to each other for some answers and some best practices, but there's still a lot of unknowns.
Very good. Well, you were under 90 seconds, so kudos. We're just going to keep rolling with you, though. Then. Let's any questions from the committee on number 9 or 10? Hearing none, going on to 11, let's back on again, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding the committee vacancy.
No updates here. We've received no news about any appointments. So you're still a 4-member committee at this time.
Thank you very much. Number 12, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding current public meetings, public safety orders. Ms. Pacanon.
Only update here is that I am seeing more advisories about hacking and cybersecurity issues. This agency, we do, because we're such a tiny agency, we do receive support and security services through the Department of Administration. So I trust that they are doing everything that they can to keep our systems safe. I don't think we would be the target necessarily of an attack, but we'll never know. I have advised the staff to refrain from being at the Capitol on Tuesday. And also Wednesday until, you know, we have some understanding of what the climate will be like and, you know, whether anything presents a possible risk to our safety and well-being.
Okay. Thank you for that. Then item number 13, new agenda items for future meetings. Committee members. Items that you'd like to see, board staff, items that you'd recommend that we have on here.
I would just say, I defer to Dr. Stenhoff, but do we want to add an item related to the discussion of some of these spaces where we might see additional practice outside of your traditional behavioral health? And how we might make sure that that's clear to the public and to individuals who might be pursuing licensure.
That might be worth having a discussion with like AZABA and Four Corners, and also maybe a distribution to those who teach to the students in the state of Arizona as well, of, you know, how much that might encompass, and releasing some of that information to them. So,
Dr. Stenhoff, given that this committee had indicated an interest, you know, perhaps in January or the early part of the year, in having a meeting focused on policy recommendations, rule revisions specifically, the meeting would be one that you would, you know, make that overt request of the ABBA to attend. That might be a topic that would be appropriate for the same agenda, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I noted one individual attended from AZABA today. So, but yeah, I think that might be a worthwhile and distribute to them that we will be having that discussion. And I would almost say welcome their interjection into the conversation as well. Yeah.
Great. And could I ask if you would help me, I'll draft an agenda, even though we don't have a date yet, of course, but I'll get a working draft going. If you can send me some language that you think would encapsulate this, and then I'll work with Ms. Galvin to make sure that it is agendized properly so we can have the discussion that you want to have.
Okay.
Thank you.
I can do that. And I'd like to propose one more conversation, and you know, if we don't need it, we don't need it. But I was alluding to it earlier about the conversations that we have in the political format with individuals who have checked certain boxes. I'd like to have a discussion, and I can't answer this, but what the parameters of inviting somebody to discuss an incident, and if the documentation is clear of what's happened and there's no conflicting statements with letters and police reports, and is it necessary for that individual to come and discuss it in that format in front of their peers and the public? So I guess parameters for that.
I think that would be a good discussion as well, sort of, and maybe even when the request is made, perhaps providing what kinds of information we would like someone to add to the conversation, should we invite them to a future meeting. Yeah, that would be helpful.
Well, thank you, committee members.
I'll get that on perhaps the next agenda.
If any of you have some ideas of like those questions, please share those with board staff so they can be included in any, like as an upload, kind of like how I made the documentation for the application. So if you want to just send a list of items you think are appropriate, then we have something to kind of work off of.
Well, and Dr. Davey, just to clarify, I don't think it has anything to do with items. I think it has more to do with procedure. Surrounding those items I would like that conversation to occur. And maybe there are parameters that exist that I'm unaware of. That's it. So
sounds good. We'll have that discussion once it's noticed. And Ms. Galvin, we'll probably need you for that, so you could tell us what up. All right, with that, I will entertain a motion to call this a wrap.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Dr. Rates.
I'll second.
Any discussion around that matter? Hearing none. All in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you all so very much. Record time today, only 2 hours. I feel as if...
On the dot.
Boom. I don't know, that doesn't happen on Dr. Davis Wilson's watch. That happens on my watch. 2 hours, write it down, people.
Mm-hmm.
Nice work.
I got it.
All right. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye, everyone.